You know what, I was actually just saying this the other day to my wife. I was saying, for graphic design, like, if you ever have a decision to make, look at McDonald's. Like, they always, everything they do is so good. Like, you look at their cups, they're awesome. You look, yeah. We got coupons the other day in the mail. I don't know if you guys have Del Taco where you live, but you know, it's like a Taco Bell type of place.
Right.
And their coupon and McDonald's coupons came at the same time. And I was like, look at the difference between like how well laid out McDonald's coupons are compared to Del Taco's coupons. Like, if you're a graphic designer, just look at McDonald's.
Welcome back to the Make or Break show, where each week we bring you stories of incredible makers and the make or break moments that have defined them along the way. I'm your host, Brandon Cullum, and this week we chat with Chris Salamone, aka Four Eyes Furniture. We get into his approach to modern design, furniture building, podcasting, library science, and our shared love of eyeglasses. All right, everybody, welcome back to the Make or Break show. We've got a fun one for you this week. We are hanging out with Chris Salamone, who we're going to get into his interview here in a second. But before we do that, I want to thank all of the supporters over on Patreon. Thank you guys so much. You make this show possible. If you guys would like to support the show and help me get some more episodes out there later this year, you can head over to patreon.com/makeorbreakshow. We're going to be hopefully doing some live shows here pretty soon, so you guys can be part of that as a patron. Also get your questions answered and some other goodies, so be sure and head over and check that out. All right, so getting into this week's interview, we're hanging out with Chris. I first came across Chris's work. It was over on YouTube, probably like most of you guys. What I found really different about his was his pacing. A lot of the maker DIY videos, they're pretty straightforward. You'll have someone building something, maybe it's sped up Jimmy Duresta style, and then they've got a voiceover that's happening during the whole process. But Chris is, he's usually telling a bigger story. There's some type of narrative or some type of thought or something that he's wanting to communicate with his video, not just the actual, hey, this is how you build a table, or this is how you build an outdoor planner. There's something more going on. And he's got a really fun sense of humor that comes out. And it's just a really laid-back style. So if you guys have not checked him out over on YouTube, definitely check him out, Four Eyes Furniture. His stuff is nuts. And not only are his videos amazing, but his actual furniture is really cool. And what I like about him, and really all the guys over at the Modern Maker podcast, if you guys don't know, Chris is one of the hosts of that with Mike Montgomery and Ben Ueda. And definitely encourage you guys to check that one out. But he especially approaches his work from a design perspective. So and if you guys are like me, I go pretty quickly to like, what's the joiner going to look like? How am I going to put this stuff together? But Chris really looks at the form, like silhouettes, or this is the way things are going to look. And he really gets into that process. And so you can definitely tell that comes out into the furniture that he designs for his house as well. Some of the stuff that he sells. And he's a blast. You guys might have heard him mentioned here recently. We had the Modestrial Maker on a few episodes ago, and they were talking about the One Sheet Plywood Challenge. And so that is the same group of guys. Chris is just one of the hosts. So without further ado, let's jump into our interview with Chris. All right, guys, I want to welcome you back to the Make or Break show. We're hanging out with the one and only Chris Salamone today, Mr. Four Eyes Furniture, calling in. Where are you in California? I meant to ask you before we hit record.
Whittier, which is basically like a suburb of LA. It's right on the border of LA and Orange County.
Okay, gotcha. So the I'm guessing the home prices are pretty expensive.
Yeah, they're not too cheap. I think, you know, my house is like a very run-of-the-mill kind of, you know, 1,500 or 1,700 square foot, 2-car garage, you know, tract housing. And it's now prices are up to like 600,000 on them.
Good Lord. That is crazy.
Yeah. It's not an ideal place to live. If you want to be a YouTuber, I mean, you can live anywhere. So I always think about that, like, oh, great, maybe I should move to somewhere a little bit cheaper. It would make more sense probably.
Yeah. Yeah. And like shop space, I'm sure would cost a lot if you had to rent something and all that. That's nuts.
Exactly.
Yeah, it's only like, my house is like 300 square feet. I'm in Athens, Georgia, so about an hour east of Atlanta, and it's like 200,000 is the price. So that's crazy.
Nice.
Cool, man. Well, we will, I kind of want to get into your background
and how you got, especially into doing what you're doing now. But before we even get into any of that, I feel like I've sent you a message before. We have something in common, the fact that we're both wearing glasses. And mine isn't for fashion. Like, I can't see.
I know
you wear them, especially when you're working. Do you get scratches, like, just all over them?
Probably. I mean, like, if I, like, really take my glasses off and, like, look in the light, there's just, like, fractures all over the place. And I'm always like, oh, my God, they're covered in dust. I didn't even realize it. And then I'll clean them. I'm like, oh, my God, I can see so much better now. But, like, you don't really realize it happening while it's happening slowly. But, yeah, I mean, I have them on all day, every day in the shop. They're always on. I don't really wear anything over them. When I first started working or woodworking, I tried goggles. Have you ever tried goggles? Like, prescription goggles?
Yeah, like the lab. Oh, the prescription goggles. No, I never tried that.
They fog up. Like, I was like, oh, this will be perfect. And they just would get so foggy. And especially, like, you know, Southern California gets pretty hot in the summer. I'm just out there and, like, you know, it's 95 degrees, but my eyeballs are like 200 degrees. I'm like, this isn't going to work. I'm switching back to glasses.
That is no fun. No fun at all. So that's cool. And so is that just naturally where the name Four Eyes came from?
It was when I had started... When I wanted to start a company of selling furniture, probably, say 6 years ago, something like that. I was just trying to think of a name. And so I wrote down, I probably wrote down like 50 ideas. I had a piece of paper with just like a ton of ideas. And I wanted it to be like something memorable, something that had something to do with me, but short. I didn't want to just use my name. And so I came up with a few ideas that like surrounded glasses, and for some reason, Four Eyes just like really stuck out to me. And so I went with it. And like whenever I tell people that name, it seems to always get a smile from people. And I think it's pretty memorable for them. So it just kind of stuck. And I was like, when I started doing YouTube, I was like, I'm just going to stick with this name.
Yeah. And the logo works so well with it too. Did you design your own logo?
I did. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. I feel like you had mentioned you had a good bit of graphic design background too.
Yeah.
But I'd love to go way back then. I think I was listening to another interview you did on another podcast. Mm-hmm. And you mentioned that when you were growing up, your mom thought that you would be a layer of tiles. Like you would be like a tiler because you love patterns and stuff. So like what was the stuff you were into as a kid?
So, okay. This is the shocking part is I never really had Lego as a kid. I don't know why, we just didn't have them in the house, and I probably would have been way into them, but we never had them, so never got into it. But when I was really little, my mom would volunteer at my older brother's school's library, and I would go with her. This was when I was like, you know, three, before I was in school. And they had, it was kind of like a Tanagram playset. I don't remember it being exactly like that, but it was similar to one of those, where it's basically just like a bunch of colorful shapes. And so I would always... It had like a book of patterns that you could follow along. And so I'd follow along to that and I would build my own, build my own patterns. And so I think off of that, like she just saw that, and I always kind of liked math and that kind of stuff growing up. So I probably had like a touch of OCD maybe. So maybe she saw me putting stuff in order and she thought, you know what? This kid should be a Tyler.
Yeah.
So yeah, they should have named me Tyler. Oh, well, missed opportunity. So I don't know. I guess I was just always kind of into like things that were patterny and kind of mathy in a way, but then also artistic, which I think is why woodworking really stuck with me, because it really is kind of like the intersection between art and math, I guess.
Yeah. Engineering. So were you like the nerdy type kid? Like what were you in high school? Like what stereotype were you?
Not really. Like I was always into like sports, basketball in particular is my favorite sport. I was always into video games, and then as I got older, I was into cars and music, and I was into all kinds of different things. I would say goofy. I was always like kind of a goofy, whimsical kid growing up, but prefer not to think of myself as a nerd.
Yeah, well, I mean, I totally think of myself as a nerd. So I meant that as a compliment.
It's a lot cooler now than it was, I don't know, 20 years ago.
Oh, yeah, definitely. It seems a lot cooler with just, there's a Marvel movie every other weekend. So that's cool. So did you play any sports? Like, did you play basketball in high school?
So growing up, I always played basketball. Then by the time I got to high school, I got kind of burnt out of it and started getting more into other things like music and that type of thing. So I still played, but I didn't play competitively anymore. And the only thing I did competitively at that point, which was basically just to get out of doing PE, was I did track. So I just did like high jump and pole vault and that kind of stuff.
Okay, cool, cool. How tall are you?
About 6'2".
Okay, gotcha. I felt like you were taller. Yeah.
6'9". I'll just
6'9". Yeah. way up there. So where'd you go to college?
Cal State Fullerton, which is a local school here.
Yeah. What'd you major in?
Business. So it was basically like, you know, I was 2 years in, had done all my GE, didn't know what I wanted to do and needed to declare a major. And I was like, business administration, that seems pretty, pretty well-rounded. So I'll just get that degree. So I did that with an emphasis in economics.
Was there a direction like you felt yourself heading towards in college, or was it just kind of wide open at that point?
At that point, it was wide open. Like, you know, I always knew that I liked doing things that were creative and that ultimately I wanted to do something professionally that was creative. But like, I was not into woodworking at all at that time in my life. You know, it wasn't anything that was even like in my world of possibilities. I just didn't think about that at all. And so I really had no idea what I was going to go into doing, but I always did have this feeling like, okay, at some point I know that I like creating things, and at some point there'll be an opportunity that I can like take advantage of and go into having a career that's creative, but no ideas as to what it would have been at that time.
Were you, did you go work at Cal State right after you got out?
Yeah. So when I was in school for the last like year and a half of going to school, I just wanted to get like kind of a dumber part or like an easier part-time job so that I could just focus on finishing school. So I got a job at the library. And then when I graduated, they hired me as staff in the library. So I worked there for several years, and actually at one point was getting my master's in library decision science.
And wait, I was what? Like, that's a thing?
That's a
what
thing.
Hold on. What is that?
Okay. So people who are librarians, like anybody who works at a library, people will call a librarian. But if you're an actual librarian, you have a master's in library science, library slash information science, they call it.
Okay.
So I was kind of, it was kind of like, I didn't know what I wanted to do. And since I was working there and they would pay for me to get my master's, I was like, well, I might as well just get my master's. And if it doesn't work out, it doesn't work out. And so I was doing it. And while I was in there, I was kind of discovering like, yeah, this definitely isn't for me. Like, I'm just not passionate about this at all. And so that was one of the driving factors to say like, okay, I need to make a career change. Okay. And this would have been at the same time that we were having our first kid. And so like, you know, thinking about money and thinking about the future and all those things, I had my business degree. I thought, okay, well, marketing is probably like the most creative of fields that I could go into that are kind of business related. Yeah, so I started looking for marketing jobs at the same time that I was getting my master's, and just kind of let fate dictate what I would do. So I happened to find a job first in graphic design, actually, and then that led to a marketing position. It was kind of like a half graphic design, half marketing position. So I found that and I was like, okay, cool. I'm just going to go this route. I'm going to quit the master's degree that I was halfway through. And so I did that, got kind of settled in for like, I don't know, say 9 months before I started like getting that itch again to start thinking about what's the next thing that I want to do.
Yeah.
And I had already been woodworking by this point, and that's when I started kind of making the transition to thinking about doing YouTube.
Okay. I still got to go back to the library science thing for a minute. Okay. What do you learn? Like, is it like an English degree? Like, what is that? I've never heard of this before.
No. So, I mean, it's pretty varied, but like there's different paths you could take. So like, if you wanted to go into like the high paced world of cataloging, for example, you could do that. When I was doing it, I would stray more towards the technical side of things.
Okay.
So those were most of the classes that I was deciding to take. In fact, like I had never coded a website before that. And so that was one of the classes that I had to take throughout the program. And it was like the one class that I really enjoyed. And so from that, it kind of led me into like learning a few other programming languages, just because I was like, God, this is actually interesting. And so there's a lot of different ways you could go into it, but
that's cool.
I mean, my experience in it, I kind of felt like I don't want to speak for everybody else that was in it, but I had a feeling like they were feigning interest. And I was like, I'm not that interested in it. Like, is everybody else really that interested in this? It didn't, yeah. I don't know. And I was just like, this isn't for me. I'm going to do something different.
That makes sense. All right. So when you started doing the graphic design and the marketing piece, mm-hmm. it sounds like you didn't have any like straight up formal training. So like, were you just like watching videos on Illustrator and Photoshop? Like, how were you learning the skills, like the technical side of it?
Yeah. So like I didn't have a degree or anything in graphic design, but like from the time I was in high school, we had Photoshop, like a pirated version of Photoshop. So I would play around in that. So I had learned that. I had learned Illustrator. I'd always just kind of done stuff on the side for fun just because I enjoyed it.
Got it.
And, you know, I took a few art classes here and there in college. So basically when I started looking for a job, I already had like a bunch of things that I had done, and I just made probably 5 other projects to round out a portfolio, and then just started applying for positions and got lucky enough to land one.
How have you like developed your design, like aesthetic during this process? Like, is there anything you can like think back to that really influenced, especially where you're at now?
With the furniture, you mean?
Yeah, kind of with the furniture, or even like back then, like what was kind of your style, or what was the stuff that you were really into on the design side of things?
I would say like, even if I go back to the graphic design stuff, it's similar. There are like connections to the woodworking in that it's usually like kind of clean, kind of minimalist, you know, like a lot of attention paid to little details of like, you know, everything lining up just right. And there's a purpose for where things are. Going back, like, you know, like we were talking about my mom thinking I was going to be a tiler, just like very structured and pattern based, and like, you know, a lot of grids there when I'm designing it that then go away later, but are kind of invisible in the end product. But, you know, maybe you don't notice it, but I think you subconsciously notice it.
Okay. Yeah, that totally makes sense.
Oh, you know what, I was actually just saying this the other day to my wife. I was saying, for graphic design, like, if you ever have a decision to make, look at McDonald's. Like, they always, everything they do is so good. Like, you look at their cups, they're awesome. We got coupons the other day in the mail. I don't know if you guys have Del Taco where you live, but, you know, it's like a Taco Bell type of place.
Right.
And their coupon and McDonald's coupons came out at the same time. And I was like, look at the difference between, like, how well laid out McDonald's coupons are compared to Del Taco's coupons. Like, if you're a graphic designer, just look at McDonald's.
Yeah. That's great. We'll definitely include that quote. It's perfect. libraries and McDonald's. But that's super true though. Like are you familiar with Charity Water by chance?
No, I don't. I might be, but I can't think of it off the top of my head.
They're one of those that are trying to bring like fresh water to the world, but they have, they're in New York, but their design side of things, they're a nonprofit, but they do an amazing job. And so my day job, I do a lot of nonprofit design stuff as well. Okay. And I feel like I'm always using them as a reference. Like you are with McDonald's. I'm like, look at these guys. This is crazy, but it's all super clean and it's real clear what they're trying to communicate. So
nice.
That's cool. Okay. So, on you were doing marketing, and then, Was it when you got a house? Did you mention that? Is that like how you kind of first got into building furniture and stuff? Like, how did that actually happen?
Yeah. So when we were looking for a house, this would have been like 2008. This was before I was still working at the library at this point, before we had kids or anything. Okay. I had gotten into SketchUp basically because we were like, you know, when we were looking for houses, I would just like kind of draw out the layouts and, oh, how would we put our furniture in here? And actually, even going back before that, like when who would become my wife, got our first apartment together, you know, I just kind of like fell into 3D modeling. And then I had fun using SketchUp. I was like, man, this is an awesome program. I can't believe it's free. And like, it's so powerful. And it was just awesome to me. And I was like, I wonder if I could draw some furniture. So I would just like look at pieces of furniture that were sitting around. And actually, as luck would have it, in the library, we had a bunch of, the Herman Miller the bench, the Nelson bench.
Yeah, gotcha.
And so I would like, I just examined it really closely one day. I was like, I'm gonna draw this in SketchUp. So I drew it in SketchUp, and that kind of like taught me, oh, here's how a piece of furniture goes together. And so from that kind of started just saying like, oh, I wonder if I could make my own designs. And I had never cut a piece of wood at this point, but I was just still like learning about joinery and the way that people put things together with wood. Like before that, in my head, a piece of furniture would have been like, you know, oh, you took a big chunk of wood and then you just like chiseled away everything that isn't there, as if you were like doing a big carving. You know, I had no idea how
like a big statue. Furniture. Yeah,
exactly. Yeah. So that kind of started teaching me about that. And then from doing that and coming up with my own designs, eventually I was like, I wonder if I could build one of these in real life. So at that point, I had found a class at a community college. It was an evening class. And so I took that for a semester where we just had to, we had to build a project that the teacher had designed. And it was, okay. It was pretty much just so that you could get some hands-on experience with tools. That's what I took it for. And then after I did that one, the next semester, they offered a class where it was basically just shop time, 2 times a week, huge shop, like 3 hours a night that you were there. And you're basically left to just like build whatever you wanted. The instructor would help you out if you needed help. And so I designed a coffee table, which was the one that's in the video for the spider coffee table. I designed that one and built it in there. And like I talk about in the video, there were definitely some shortcomings with it, but it was enough to be like, okay, I actually accomplished something. This was awesome. Like, you know, there was nothing. And now here's a coffee table that we have. And so from that point, I was pretty much like hooked. And I was like, okay, I need to go buy equipment and turn the garage into a workshop.
Was it hard going from digital designing to real world?
Not really. Because I feel like in a lot of ways, SketchUp, if you use it in that way, you can almost use it as like a woodworking video game. I've heard Shannon Rogers describe it like that before.
Yeah, that's a good point.
But you can kind of like virtually go through a build and come across all of the challenges that you're gonna. Because as you're building it and building the pieces, you're thinking, how would I make this shape? How would I make this individual shape? Oh, okay. There'd be this kind of jig that I could use on the table saw to do that. So it actually, I mean, I think using it that way gave me a real leg up and a real advantage to woodworking, because it was making me think through things way ahead of time before I was ever actually sitting there like, how am I going to cut this?
Yeah. That makes a ton of sense. Yeah. My wife will give me a hard time when I'm trying to build something and I spend a really long time, whether in SketchUp or Fusion. Mm-hmm. And she's like, when are you going to actually build something? I'm like, this is, I promise you, saving me a ton of time and material if I get through it. So I'm going to figure out the stuff. Is that when you also, because I know, especially on your videos, you'll talk about your like iterative process where you just throw a ton of different designs out there and you're looking at the silhouettes and the shapes. Mm-hmm. Were you kind of doing that process too at this point with SketchUp, or is that something that happened a little bit later?
That would have been later once I got more into designing furniture. And then it would be like, okay, I need to come up with a new chair design or whatever, right? So it would always start off with just very rough, because I think when I first started doing it, I would try to build like detailed models straight off the bat. And then you'd spend a bunch of time building something that you don't even like the looks of necessarily.
Yeah.
I guess the way that I sort of refined my process was, rather than spending all that time up front, let's just throw out like 10 ideas right off the bat and then see what I gravitate towards. And then we'll refine those ones. And then once I get like, okay, I like this kind of look, now I can start actually figuring out how I would build the piece. And, you know, in doing that, you're going to realize like, okay, aesthetically, this needs to change because it'll be a lot easier to build this way, or, you know, whatever obstacles you come across kind of dictate what the end look is going to be. But at least getting to a design that you're 90% happy with, you can get there a lot quicker doing that, I think. And then, you know, really get in the muck and the mire of figuring it all out with a detailed model.
Yeah. So when did it make the switch where you said I could actually like sell some of this stuff? Is this when like Four Eyes came about, like as a business?
Yeah. So, okay. It would have been about 2010, I guess, that I was taking those night classes.
Okay.
And so those two classes took me the year to do. And pretty much right after that was when I started like building out my shop. Okay. And I took like a pretty heavy plunge into it. Like once I knew I was going to do it, I was like, okay, I'm going to go whole hog into this thing. And so I bought a bunch of equipment. Like I probably spent, you know, $15,000 that I'd saved up just on equipment and, you know, getting the electrical work done in the garage and just getting it ready so that I was at a point that I could start making things.
Yeah.
So the reason I started selling furniture, I guess I had already kind of decided that I was going to eventually do that at that point, because I was like, I need to justify this money that I'm spending.
Yeah. Yeah.
I need to earn it back. So it wasn't right away that I started selling furniture. I just spent that initial time, you know, getting a little bit better at woodworking, because still I had only built one project at this point.
Yeah.
You know, all I had done was, go ahead.
How did you know what to buy? Like what tools you needed?
So at that time, I mean, I did watch a fair amount of YouTube. There wasn't that many creators. Like the main one that I watched was the Wood Whisperer. He was the main guy that I watched when I first got into woodworking. So I'd kind of see like what he had and how he was doing the things he had. Taking that class was really beneficial because that class had like every tool in it. And
okay, cool.
It let me see like what are the tools that I'm actually using here.
Yeah.
And so then I could focus on those ones first. And then I would read a lot. I don't know if it's still around, but there was a forum I used to go on called woodnet.net. I always thought that was kind of a nifty name.
That's awesome, yeah.
But I guess with just wood.net must have already been taken. So they went woodnet.net.
Yeah,
I would read on there a lot and post a lot of questions. And, you know, I'd get feedback from people who had like 20 years of experience of building things. So basically just through those three things combined, kind of put together a list of tools that I thought I needed and that I could start with and got those. And then once I started selling pieces, I would always kind of take whatever money I was making and say, okay, now I can afford to get this tool. And I would add that to the stable and just kind of went from there.
Especially since you kind of got it all in one big burst, is there anything looking back you regretted or something like you spent more money on than you really need to for other folks that they're thinking of doing the same thing?
Yeah, I think, I mean, and again, this is for the types of things that I was building at the time and probably still to what I continue to build. I could have gotten away with a much smaller bandsaw. And I know like now even Grizzly makes like that desktop bandsaw. Something like that would have been, if I knew what I knew now and they made that then, I probably would have bought something like that.
Gotcha.
The edge sander that I have, I probably could have gotten away without having that. I think I bought that a little early. I mean, I still do use it from time to time and it's really convenient when I use it, but I probably could have gotten away without that.
Gotcha. That makes sense. And did I see like as of like either yesterday or a couple of days ago, you got a new table saw, like the Big Daddy?
As of yesterday. Yeah. The Saw Stop.
That's awesome. And when have you started to put it together?
Yeah, so I actually got two of them. I got the cabinet saw one, the PCS, and then I got a job site saw one as well.
Oh, cool. Yeah.
So it was literally like, you know, yesterday when I got home from work. So it's not even, has it been 12 hours yet? I don't know. It's been like 12 hours right now since I first saw them. But I put together the job site saw one last night.
That's cool.
And then I'm in the middle of a project. So that's going to make this tricky because I have all these huge boxes in my garage now.
Yeah.
And so I don't want to switch over right now. Obviously, I want to finish up the project because, you know, I'm sure there's going to be, I'm sure a lot of my jigs are going to have to be remade because
there's going to be
slight variations between that and my Grizzly that I have now. So I'm going to finish up this project and then I'll probably put it together, but it probably won't be in videos until about a month and a half from now. I'd say like late June or so.
Yeah. What made you decide to like upgrade? And like as a bigger question, like when does it make sense, at least on your end, to get something bigger or better?
I mean, it doesn't have to do with capabilities. Like, you know, I don't think there's anything that I couldn't do with my table saw that I'll be able to do now. For me, it honestly comes down to now that this is becoming more a part of my livelihood.
Yeah.
I want that insurance policy.
Yeah, the safety of it.
Yeah, that's the number one seller for me that I want. Aside from that, I haven't used them yet, but from everything I hear, they're also awesome table saws in addition to that safety feature that nobody else has. But I mean, that was the thing that sold me on it. It was just like, you know, if I cut a finger off now, I'm obviously it would be catastrophic in anybody's life, but now I'm actually losing money. Like So it just felt like a safety net that I needed to have there at this point.
Gotcha. Yeah, that makes a ton of sense. Mm-hmm. Okay, so going back to when you are designing and selling furniture, how long were you producing furniture for people?
It was about...
like as a focus.
I guess probably about 3 years, maybe 4 years that I was like selling furniture.
Was it what you expected, like looking back on it?
Yes and no. So when I first started getting into it, I kind of saw it as like somebody... So for somebody to buy furniture off you, I saw that as like the ultimate validator that you're doing good things, because it's like, you know, they have their choice of everything in the world. They somehow stumbled on you and they've decided like, I really like this guy's stuff and I'm willing to put money down on it for him to build it for me. So that's kind of what excited me about it at first. And then that not lost its luster, I guess, but just like, you know, I was still flattered that I was able to achieve that, but it was like, okay, now what? I'm getting some orders here. But I'm building the same things over and over, and okay. I'm not building new things, even though I continue to have new ideas. You know, people want me to build a different variation of whatever they see on the website. And so I felt like I was kind of stagnant in my skills, and it was just becoming not as much fun and as enjoyable as I thought it could be. Yeah, so yeah. That's kind of what, and I had honestly wanted to do the YouTube thing for a while before that, but you know, factoring all those things in was really the driving force behind wanting to make that switch.
Did you have any video production side background?
Not with in respect to woodworking. I did like probably, I don't know, 11 years ago from now, me and a friend, like we wanted to try to make a little like webisodes sitcom thing one time. So that was what taught me how to film things and edit things, just kind of goofing around with friends filming things and then having to edit them. So I had that experience, and that got me good enough to be technologically proficient, but I hadn't edited something in like, you know, 6 years in that meantime, probably before I went to YouTube. Yeah.
And that first video, I mean, compared to other people's first videos, was, I mean, really polished. Was that your actual first one you like in posted? How long did that editing process take?
So it still takes a long time for me, but that one took extra long just because I didn't know what it was going to be going into it. And so I was kind of well, you know, I watch a lot of other YouTubers. I like what they're doing, but I don't want to do what they're doing because they're already doing it. So I want to do something different. And I didn't know what exactly that would be, but I was just like, I'm going to go out there and film it. Okay. So here was kind of my thing is I thought the most typical video that you see, right? The most average video out there is going to be all shots that are a medium distance. So basically just think like waist up shot of the person working and usually a sped up shot of some sort. And so I said, okay, those are the two things that I'm going to avoid, or not avoid, but that I'm going to do less of because there's so many people that are already doing that. So that led me to do a lot of tight shots and a lot of far away shots and still a lot of medium shots just because you need those shots in there. So that was kind of the only thing I knew going in. And so going into building that first project, I was just like, I'm just going to film a ton of stuff. So like a typical video of mine now probably consists of anywhere between like 60 to 100 shots if it's a really big project. That bench would probably be, just call it like 75 shots is what it would be made up. For that video though, I did like 250 shots. Just because I was I don't know what I need. I don't know what this thing's going to look like in the end. Yeah. But I was just like, I'll just film a bunch and we'll figure it out when I'm editing. So I got all that footage. Then for music, when I would go to sleep, I would listen to Brian Eno Music for Airports. I don't know if you've ever heard
that. I've heard of Brian Eno. I didn't know there was one for, is that a playlist like on Spotify?
No, that's an album that he made.
It's an album. Okay. That's
fine. I think it's called Music for Airports. It might be called Airport Music. I don't know. But if you listen to the music in that first video, you can tell it's very inspired by that, but it's just like this very like airy kind of keyboard open music. And so I was like, you know, this would make really awesome music for like a How It's Made kind of video. And so I made a song, me and my friend made a song that kind of was inspired by that. And I put that down in the track and then just started editing to it. And so that kind of dictated like the slow pace that I ended up with. And so there's obviously differences between that video and what I'm doing now, but I will admit that it's like kind of 90% of what I'm doing now has remained the same.
Yeah.
So I got kind of lucky, I guess, in that I just stumbled upon that tone.
Yeah.
The first time I was editing a video.
When did you, cause I mean, you almost rap or you rap like a story in the project build. Was that something you knew you wanted to do? Like that's something that's, I feel like really unique to the way you work. There's usually something bigger that you're saying in the video that you're making. Or was that like right off the bat that you wanted to do?
No, I didn't know that I wanted to do that. And actually that's one of the main differences in the first one is that I don't really tie it up the way that I usually tie them up now. But I think in the first one, the ending, all I did was just kind of like reflect on the project and what I would have done differently.
Yeah.
And so I think that in a way, woodworking projects, especially if it's the first time that you're building something, you know, if you're designing and building something, there's probably a reason that you're doing it. And so just kind of like, you know, be open and say what those reasons are and what your thought process was, why you decided to design something a certain way, what you thought about it after that. I think just doing those things, it's automatically going to sort of lead to a narrative being there. And yeah. Then as far as like, you know, when there's like a, you know, life lesson or whatever in that video, that kind of just like happens based on opportunity. So if I'm editing a video or I see the footage and I'm like, oh, it'd be funny if I said this at the end or whatever, then I'll just be like, okay, I'll work that in somehow.
Yeah. 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 So that first one, did it take off pretty quick? Like, did you see like, oh, YouTube could be a real thing, not just like a something I'm doing on the side just for fun?
Yeah. I mean, like, so the first video, okay, before I put up my first video and I was stopping, when I had said, okay, I'm going to stop selling furniture to try out this YouTube thing, I had resigned myself to being like, okay, for the first 2 years, I'm probably going to make videos that like, you know, 200 people are going to watch. And I was like, okay, well, if that's the case, I'm fine with that. All I need to do is just focus on making things that I think are cool and that I'm proud of. And yeah. So, as you know, I got lucky, I guess, in that like that first one actually got a lot of attention. It got mentioned by a couple of the other podcasts, which, you know, brought a few hundred subscribers my way, which, you know, in the beginning, those few hundred subscribers are so hugely beneficial to your channel.
Yeah.
And really motivating, especially, you know, if you go from 200,000 to 200,200, it doesn't feel like anything. But when you go from zero to 200, you're like, holy crap, there's people out there that like are enjoying this and care about it.
Yeah.
So the first video, I would say like, you know, I don't remember what day of the week I put it up. Say I put it up on a Thursday, like by the weekend, or say by the next, by 10 days out, it probably had like, you know, 10,000 views or something like that.
Yeah.
And I was like, holy crap, like, I think this is going to be a thing. Like, I need to like start working on another project right away. And I'm now like super, not that I wasn't motivated before, but now I'm like super motivated and there's a fire under me.
Yeah. 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 How, other than, you mentioned kind of, whether it's a bigger life lesson or even like your production schedule now, like how has it changed since, I guess, a couple of years ago when you started the, on the video side of things?
Yeah. I mean, well, it's crazy because in my personal life, I've become more busy because now we have a second kid. You know, I think at that point, was I already, I can't remember if I was doing the same job that I'm doing now already at that point, but not only has life away from YouTube ramped up, I still work full time.
Yeah.
But so the video schedule has also ramped up. Like at that point, when I first started, I think my goal was to do one video a month.
Okay.
But then as I saw more opportunity, I was like, okay, I need to ramp it up a little bit. And now I've gotten to the point where I feel like it might be an unsustainable long-term schedule because I'm pretty much right now doing like three builds a month plus working full-time. Plus we just had another baby, so we have two kids now. And it's, I mean, I'm never bored, which is a good thing.
Yeah.
But it can be pretty stressful at times. And so I'm going to try to dial it back to just like two videos a month maximum. And maybe even look into ways that, you know, a year, maybe 2 years down the road, I'm doing maybe even a little bit less than that, maybe a video every 3 weeks. But making sure that everything is larger in scope and I can get more into detail with each build. Like actually the video that I just finished editing it yesterday, and it, when will this come out?
This will be like a month from now.
Okay, so then my video that came out 3 weeks ago, when so it's going to come out next week to us in real time. It's the like most in-depth video that I've done so far, and like it was definitely, I could see like, okay, this takes a lot of extra editing to pull these videos off, but I enjoy it. Like if I could have any pace and money were all the same and opportunities were all the same, I would like a pace where it was like one big project a month where you could like have a new original design, work your way through all the challenges that it's going to, you know, bring upon, and then wrap it all up and hopefully teach people about what you learned from it.
Yeah, yeah. It's almost a little bit more like how like Mark Spagnuolo with the Guild.
Yeah.
Like they're super long, super detailed. And so the audience isn't as big, but they're more invested right. like financially yeah. and just from viewership. So
yeah, we had him on our podcast and he talked about like the funnel basically. Mm-hmm. So he's at like that place in the funnel where, I mean, I think he's even more of a hardcore woodworker than I am. Like he's more technical than I am in like,
yeah.
and he's such a great teacher. I don't think I yeah. have that teaching ability that he has because I'm just like a little more like, you know, I rarely talk on camera just because I feel really self-conscious whenever I do it.
Yeah.
So I probably don't have that personality to be a teacher in the way that he is, but I think I should probably be closer in the funnel to where he is than where I currently am.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, yeah, I'll get there.
It's almost like it starts out with your co-hosts with like Mike and Ben, then to you, and then to like folks like Mark and everything.
Yeah. I'm kind of in the middle ground between
yeah.
them.
Yeah, yeah. Speaking of them, so how did that happen? Because I think I found the podcast because of you.
Okay.
And then, I hadn't heard of like Benueta or Homemade Modern, and I was like, my gosh, like this is oh, nuts. Wow. And then, that's how I found Mike too. So you were like my funnel to them, which may not be like everybody else.
Yeah, but it's probably usually the opposite. Since both of them are quite a bit more popular than me. But the way that it came about, it was, I think, I might have the order of this slightly wrong, but I think one day I saw maybe Bob go on Instagram Live. I was like, okay. Oh, this looks fun. And so later that day, I was like, I'm going to try Instagram Live. So I went on there and I was talking to, you know, answering questions. And I think Mike came in there and said, what's up? And we had talked a few times through emails, just like, you know, hey, yeah. man, you're doing cool stuff. Just, you know, nothing in depth, just kind of like introducing ourselves to each other.
Gotcha.
And like, you know, starting the basis for what could be a conversation at some point. And so then later that day, Mike went on there and he was, I think he was working on like, he was blowtorching something and like answering questions live. And so I saw him on there and I was like, hey, have you ever thought about doing a podcast? And so he kind of responded. And then I wrote him an email later that night and was like, hey, if you ever want to do one, like, you know, I'm down to do it.
Yeah.
And so we started talking a little bit about it and it, you know, it seemed like the format was three people. So we're like, who are we going to get for a third person? So we kicked around some ideas. I had never talked to Ben at that point, but he knew Ben a little bit. I don't think they like were super close at that point, but definitely had a relationship with him. They were both doing stuff with Ryobi at that point. And so he was like, you want me to ask Ben? I was like, that would be awesome. But I had assumed like, oh no, Ben's like way too popular and way too big. He's never going to say yes. So he asked him and Ben said yes. I was like, oh my God, that's awesome. So we just, we all hopped on a call, kind of planned out what we thought it could be and said, okay, let's just shoot for like within a month from today, let's record three episodes. And once we cool. get those recorded, we'll put them up and we'll just, you know, we'll see what the chemistry's like and kind of figure it out as we go along. So just started doing it.
Yeah. What, was it a joke at first? Like when you said, hey, do you want to start a podcast? Or like, had you been thinking about it for a little bit?
I'd been thinking about it for a little okay. bit, kind of just as a outlet to be able to talk to people about this kind of stuff, just because sometimes I feel bad for my wife, like that I talk to her too much about YouTube and woodworking and that stuff. And, you know, obviously yeah. she cares about it and supports me, but she's not like, I know she doesn't want to talk about it as much as I
right.
want to talk about it. So I was like,
right.
it'd probably be nice to have an outlet to talk to other people about this kind of stuff.
That's cool. Well, man, I appreciate your time. I know we went over a little bit, and your stuff is so cool. So looking
Thank
forward
you.
To the someday maybe of going full time or just the more of what you're already doing is amazing. So and I love your fights on Reddit are always fun just to see what you're doing. So
that is always funny to people get mad.
Oh yeah, which is crazy. But thank you so much, man. It was fun chatting with you.
Yeah, for sure. Thanks for having me.
All right. Thanks for hanging around to the end. Hope you guys enjoyed that conversation with Chris. And if you wanted a little bit extra, we did an after show with Chris where he was answering some of your guys' questions. So if you guys would like to get access to that after show, you can head over to patreon.com/makeorbreakshow. And if you guys actually ask questions to me, I'll make sure and send that file over to you just for asking the questions so you don't have to be a Patreon supporter as well. But also, this is where I give you guys a quick update on the things that I am doing. Even though we had an episode come out Monday, episode just came out on Monday, I haven't had a ton of the time in the shop, been playing around with some CNC stuff, been doing this crazy Marvel Aztec calendar. You probably have seen some Star Wars ones going around here recently. And so I've been working on that and then figuring out some plans for a X-Wing swing for my daughter. So lots of Star Wars inspired stuff that is coming here real soon. But I'd love to know what you guys are working on. Hit me up over on Instagram at the Make or Break Shop. Hope you guys are doing great. And until next time, go make or break something in your shop. See you guys.